ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from Canto 7, The Science of God Realization, I think it's called. Okay. The Science of God. And today we are on Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb. And I think it's text 50, although the book is on 55. It's text 50. Oh, I see it happen, the wind blew up. So please repeat. Deva, Asura, Manusha, Va, Devo Suya Manusha Va, Yaksha, Gandharva, Eva, Va, Yaksho Gandharva Eva Gandharva Eva Va. Bhajan Mukunda Charanam. Bhajan Mukunda Charanam. Swastimam Shat Yata Vayam Swastimam Shad Yata Vayam Devo Suro Manasyo Iva Yaksho Gandharva Eva Va Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Sastimam Shad Yatavayam Devo Suryo Manu Shoiva Yaksho Gandharva Eva Va Bhajan Mukunda Charanam Sastimam Shad Yatavayam Deva, a demigod. Asura, a demon. Manusha, a human being. Va, or Yaksha, a. Yes. Yaksha. There we go. Easy. A Yaksha. A member of the demoniac species. Gandharva, a Gandharva, Eva, indeed, Va, or Bhajan, rendering service, Mukunda Charanam, to the lotus feet of Mukunda, Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna, who can give liberation. Swastimam, full of all auspiciousness. Shat, becomes. Yata, just as. Vayam, we. Prahlad Maharaj. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. If a demigod, demon, human being, yaksha, gandharva, or anyone within this universe renders service to the lotus feet of Mukunda, who can deliver liberation, he is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, exactly like us, the Mahajans headed by Prahlad Maharaj. purport by Srila Prabhupada. Prahlad Maharaj, by his living example, requested his friends to engage in devotional service, whether in demigod society, asura society, human society, or Gandharva society. Every living entity should take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda and thus become perfect in good fortune. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Ajnanta Miranda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramanitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. We are born in the darkness of ignorance. Our spiritual master is opening our heart with the torchlight of knowledge, and therefore we offer our most humble and respectful obeisances in the dust of his lotus feet. Deva, devo suyur manasova, yaksha gandharva evava, bhajan mukunda charanam, svasti mam shat yatavayam. If a demigod, demon, human being, yaksha, gandharva, or anyone within this universe renders service to the lotus feet of Mukunda, who can deliver liberation, he is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, exactly like us, the Mahajans, headed by Sri Prahlad. So where are we? This canto, this part of the Bhagavatam, I decided yesterday to read a little bit back, and then I ended up going a little bit further back and a little bit further back, ended up reading the whole canto. It was so exciting. It's so enlivening to the heart. Of course, we know the history. The history is that devas and demigods and demons are always having difficulty between themselves. Who should be in charge? Anybody ever notice that around this world? Everybody's wondering who should be in charge? Anybody feel like they should be in charge and somebody else shouldn't be in charge? I mean, this is the nature of the material world. There's always competition for supremacy. And this is makes everything very difficult. So in the case, we know Hiranyakashipu became very disturbed when his brother was killed. Right? He became very disturbed and caused havoc in the universe, actually took control. And then he decided to take up a little program of austerity to really become in control. He just really wanted, it was like, in America I always keep saying next level, let's get to the next level. So he wanted to go to the next level, he wanted immortality, which no one has ever achieved in this material world on a material level. No one has ever achieved immortality, but he desired it so much, he performed austerities which were unimaginable. Inconceivable austerities which Hiranyakashipu underwent just to achieve a material goal. And we should remember that as this class goes on, because as one is willing to endeavor so strenuously just to achieve some flickering material situation, as His Grace Panchagoda was explaining so nicely yesterday, that everything here is temporary. Nasato vijite bhavo nabo vijite satah. That which is material is temporary, and that which is spiritual is eternal. Yet we strive so much for this material success. So Prahlad's father, he decided that I'm going for immortality. And he went and performed great austerities. And of course, he caused great disturbance to the entire universe, to the point where Lord Brahma had to come and ask him, what's going on? The whole universe was catching on fire. And he said, I want immortality. And Brahma says, I cannot give that which I do not possess. So then we know the story. He asked for this benediction and that benediction and this benediction and that one and this one, that one, this one, that one, on and on and on. Brahma says, so be it, so be it, so be it, let it be, let it be. And then Hiranyakashipu, of course, then considered that he had covered all the bases. I guess that's not appropriate, unless you're an American. He covered all angles, okay. Covered all angles. He had all angles covered. He thought, for sure, nothing can kill me. I'm immortal. And he went like this. I'll explain this later. Just remind me to explain this later. Hiranyakashipu, yes, I'm immortal, right? Because this also has to deal with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so, we know the story. Prahlad Maharaj, when Hiranyakashipu went to perform these austerities, the demigods took advantage of the situation because the leader of the demons was no longer available to give direction. And so the demigods became very, very powerful, and they overturned the demons. And the demons had to retreat, but once Hiranyakashipu came back, the demons got fired up. Our captain of our team is back, we're ready to go. And they did, they took control, and the demigods had to go into hiding. And when Hiranyakashipu was doing his performing his austerities and the demigods took over, they captured the palace of Hiranyakashipu and his wife. What was his wife's name? Yadu. I have it written down on a piece of paper in my notebook, but I forgot to bring my notebook up here. Can you bring my notebook and put it here? That way I'll refer to it and forget where I'm at. Anyway, his wife and the demigods, I mean, this is, we have to consider the seriousness of the situation because the demigods captured Hiranyakashipu's wife and they had a plan to kill the child as soon as it was born. This doesn't happen very often in demigod society. Demigods don't usually think, let's kill a kid. Just another, assuming that the kid is a demon. In my life, I've accepted a humanist, not part of my Krishna consciousness, but I've adapted it to Krishna consciousness. And it begins with prajalpa. That means speaking impeccably, speaking in such a way that the person that you're speaking to can make no assumptions about where you stand. So therefore there are no assumptions, and you speak in such a way that the person replies that you'll make no assumptions of that person. So you have these first two things, impeccable speaking and making no assumptions. Then the third thing is always do your very best. Always do your very best in whatever you're doing. The topmost level of what you can do, be on your game at every day, at every time, at every moment. One day it may be just a little bit, someday it may be a lot, but whatever that day brings you, whatever opportunity you have been given, whatever facility we've been given that day, we use it to our utmost ability. And then we don't worry about what people who don't have our best interest in mind say. These four principles. If someone has your best interest in mind, then it makes a difference. But if someone doesn't really have your best interest in mind and only wants to break the first rule of impeccable speech and just do pajalpa, then what is the value of that opinion? So then going back to Hiranyakashipu, so I don't get lost. So anyway, the demons, they made the assumption. I mean, the demigods made a wrong assumption. They assumed that because the seed that was planted into the womb of this lady was planted by literally the greatest demon that ever existed, the only possibility of this child coming out was that it was going to be a demon, and therefore we should kill it. Wrong assumption. And the person who doesn't make assumptions, who is one of the greatest authorities in the universe, Narada Muni, came. And he said, you're making an assumption. You think that the seed in this woman's womb is a demon, but the seed in this woman's womb is one of the greatest devotees that has ever appeared in this world, confirmed by the bell. One of the greatest devotees who's ever appeared in this material world is residing within the womb of the wife of the greatest demon. Just see the dichotomy here. See the dichotomy. So, it's a nice lesson to be learned, because the demigods, upon hearing from the authority of Narada Muni, they just immediately accepted, because they understand him to be a spiritual authority, and therefore there's no need to really inquire. You can inquire submissively, but one meets someone who has impeccable spiritual character and exhibits a symptoms of self-realization, then that person, when he speaks, Shishi Gonitai Ki Jai, Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, Shishi Radhe Sham Lita Devi Shakadevi Ki Jai, then you just accept. One who has implicit faith in Krishna and the spiritual master can render devotional service. So the demigods, they are like that. They have that type of faith. When they know that Narada Muni shows up and says, don't do this, do this, they just immediately did. And so Narada Muni took Prahlad Maharaj's wife, Kayadu, I wrote it down, Kayadu, to his ashram. And in that ashram, he gave all instructions and spiritual knowledge to the lady, Kayadu. But Prahlad Maharaj in the womb, and he heard all these instructions. Interesting to note that Yayadu didn't want the child to take birth without the protection of her husband, so the child stayed within the womb for the duration of time that she desired. This is the power of certain living entities within this world. We go outside the realm of physics or all these material sciences and go to the next level, I'll say. So Prahlad Maharaj, he heard all these instructions, deep, deep spiritual instructions given by Narada Muni to his mother within the womb. And when Hiranyakashipu finished his austerities and was given this unbelievably surcharged material body, with great power resumed his demoniac activities, she gave birth to this boy, Prahlad. And Prahlad, from the very beginning of his life, was a devotee, showed all kinds of symptoms that manifest only in great souls. And so when it came time for him to enter into school, Gurukula, what was the name of his teachers? Anybody raise your hand. What was the name of his teachers? I'm just seeing if everybody's paying awake. If you ask a question to the class, then you get the attention back, you know? Sananda. Sananda and Amar. Yeah. So he went to a Gurukul, and the Gurukul teachers were trying to train him up on how to become a demon. This is your friend, this is your enemy. This is the goal of life. Eat, drink, and be merry, because tomorrow you may die. Just go for it. Huh? In America, when I was a young man, they had an ad on television, grab all the gusto you can, because you don't know when it's going to end, right? Just grab it all. Just take. What was the name of it? There was one famous person in the Vedic history, beg, borrow, or steal somehow, they get ghee. Huh? Charvaka Muni, yeah. No matter what, just get ghee, because you get ghee, you can enjoy. In other words, the whole purpose of life is to enjoy. This is the whole goal. Enjoy. So Prahlad Maharaj went to this school, and anybody here go to school? Raise your hand. Anybody ever go to school? Only five people went to school. Nobody? Raise your hand if you went to school. You didn't go to school? Okay. You didn't go to school? Okay. Okay. Whenever we're in school, I remember being in school. Actually, I shouldn't have been in school because I wasn't qualified, but that's another story for another day. So whenever we're in school, the only thing I could think of was when is playtime. During the study period, I'm just thinking, when is recess? When, just looking at the clock, tick, 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 trying to get to the playtime. Same thing happened with Pallad and his little demon associates, right? The time for playtime arrived. And the kids said, hey, Pallad, the teachers aren't around. The teachers are gone. They've gone off for, what is it, tiffin time, huh? They've gone off for having a little tea, whatever. So we're free. We can do whatever we want. Let's go play. And Pallad says, well, I have a little story to talk about. I have a little something I'd like to bring up, and that is, I heard this information a long time ago, and he starts talking about the purpose of life, Svartagatim, and that life is meant for Bhagavad Dharma, to understand the absolute truth. There's a very wonderful lecture, if you ever get a chance, I think it's 71, 72, Srila Prabhupada doing the Bhagavad Dharma discourses in New Vrindavan, and he was telling all the disciples, and there were many guests, it was a very wonderful festival. And he was talking about this Bhagavad Dharma, or the purpose of life, to understand who we are, what our relationship is to the Supreme Personality of God, and how to act in such a way that we can attain that goal. So Pallad Maharaj began to speak all this information to his students. He says, life is very, very serious. He said, the first 10 years, you just mess around as a kid. You don't really do anything. You're just a kid, and you just do kid things. Of course, you know the story, and he said, you spend so much time sleeping. Of course, the first thing he said was, you spend 12 hours sleeping. That's the mode of ignorance, by the way. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that if you sleep more than 6 hours, you've achieved the mode of ignorance. I've been quite successful in that endeavor, but we should control our sleeping a little bit. So Pallad says the first half, like one half of your life, spent sleeping. So say we sleep 8 hours, as the modern scientists say we should do. It's one third of your life. It's just done. Okay, I'll tell a little story. I was flying from Gainesville, Florida, Alachua. You probably heard of Gainesville, you may not have. And going to LA, because at one point I was a member of the BBT Advisory Council. We just gave advice, I don't know what happened. And so I'm sitting in the airport in transit, and there's a newspaper next to me. And so I went into Maya and I opened up the newspaper, and there was an article. What does it take in life to do everything that the experts say we're supposed to do to become whole in our life? So it says you must sleep 8 hours, you must work 8 hours, you must exercise 1 hour, you must be with your wife and children together for 1 hour, you must be with your wife alone for 1 hour, you must be with your children for 1 hour, you must exercise for 1 hour, you must have some personal time, you must have this. And by the time the article was over, it takes 47 hours to become a whole person in this material world. You need 47 hours, according to the experts, to develop a type of consciousness where you're actually feeling whole in your life. They did not include any spirituality, which was the missing link in their philosophy. Right? So Pallad Maharaj went through a basic, the article said you spend like 5 years just brushing your teeth. And you know, if you consider every action that we do, it takes time. So Pallad Maharaj explained all these things to all his classmates, and at the end, the classmate said, whoa, where did you learn all that from? How did you sneak out of the ashram in the middle of the night and break out of your father's, his father was he was Hiranyakashipu. He had like total control, what do you call that? A disorder. He had like a mental disorder. He had to be totally in control of everything at all time, all place, under all circumstances. His father was a demon. He certainly wouldn't let his child sneak out in the middle of the night. So the kids asked, whoa, how'd this happen? Where'd you get all this? This is really interesting. Where did you learn all this? And so that's where we're at today. We're in chapter 7, where Pallad, in the beginning of this chapter, explains that here's what happened. My father went to perform austerities. The demigods took over. They beat up all the demons, and they were going to kill my mother. But then the Narada Muni showed up and saved my mother, and I got to hear all this really interesting stuff in the womb of my mother. And then, so he tells the whole story very briefly. When it comes to talking about himself, it was very brief. Just maybe 25 verses. And then again, he begins to give them information, more information than they gave in the chapter before. He starts to give more information, more spiritual knowledge, more reasons why one should take up the process of Krishna consciousness, the urgency. When we say this word urgency, it's very nice, because we learn this from Bhagavad Gita. Several places in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says that from the very beginning of one should take up Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of one's life. And then in one place only, he says that one should take up Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life, or from the point that one understands the urgency of the message. Because there's a certain urgency to the message that is being given in spiritual instruction. There's an urgency that's there. And this is what happened when Srila Prabhupada came to the West. I don't want to extend the too long, but you couldn't have more of a perfect timing for Srila Prabhupada to enter into America than 1965. America, it was just like a ripe fruit sitting on the tree, dripping with nectarine sweet juice. Segregation was just starting. The anti-Vietnam War was happening, women's rights were happening, all these things were happening, and the youth, the young people of America were making demands and making, just getting into it. And Prabhupada came right when everyone was just kind of like, we don't want what we've had before. We want something better. We want something more out of our lives. We want something greater. And Prabhupada came with the mercy. The mercy was that simply taking up this process of Krishna consciousness, you'll become happy. You can't become happy. You cannot become satisfied outside the realm of spiritual endeavor. It just doesn't happen. So Prahlad Maharaj instructs more and more and more of these things. And so now we get to today's verse, which is almost the end of the chapter. He's giving all these instructions. And so he comes to the point where Prahlad is explaining that even if one is a demigod, or one's a demon, a human being, a yaksha, a gandharva, or anyone within this universe, renders service at the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, is actually situated in the most auspicious condition of life, like us. He says, like us. So here is the important point of this purport. Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj, by his living example, requested his friends to engage in devotional service. And this is what attracted us, was Srila Prabhupada's living example. The living example of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord. One who has depth of spiritual knowledge, an understanding that goes beyond just the mundane. Because basically religion in the material world now is just looking to become comfortable or to become better off materially. We have to actually go to a deeper level where we are willing to give, just like we were discussing earlier, where Hiranyakashipu was willing to sacrifice for immortality like no one had ever sacrificed before. But if you really want to sacrifice, there's a saying that, you know, sacrifice a child for the family, a family for the village for the whatever, and then sacrifice yourself for becoming self-realized. In other words, we really have an opportunity here, a golden opportunity, to actually advance in spiritual life under proper guidance. Throughout this whole teaching, which Prahlad Maharaj is giving to his friends, he always emphasizes proper teaching, proper instruction, a proper guide, someone who can actually give the information so that we can actually assimilate that information and understand that information. But once we get this information, it is incumbent upon every person who gains this information to distribute this information. Because there is, we know these two words, gyan, vigyan. Gyan is there. Gyan means knowledge. And we gain knowledge by studying the scriptures, engaging in our devotion. We gain this gyan, we gain this understanding. But for it to become realized knowledge, vigyan, one, it's almost impossible to get unless one shares that knowledge with others. When one begins to share the knowledge they receive with others, that gyan, that knowledge begins to, what do you call it, go deeper into the heart and becomes realized knowledge. That you actually realize that I'm not this material body, I'm spirit soul, I'm part and parcel of Krishna. I have something other to, something greater to accomplish in this life than just material acquisitions, than just material name and fame, which will just diminish. It will just diminish over time. It may last one generation, two generations, three generations. It may last 10 generations. But it's temporary. This information is very, very interesting. So this story of Prahlad Maharaj telling his students all these things about the changing of the body. That don't worry. This body is changing in every moment. We're going to have, I always give the example, I remember being like a little tiny boy, 3 or 4 years old, and I wanted had a tricycle, and that was my mode of transportation, had a three-wheeler, right? And at a certain age, I thought, oh, I need a two-wheeler. If I get a two-wheeler, then I'll be happy. Then at a certain age, I wanted a four-wheeler, I wanted a car, then I'll be happy, you know? At what point does it end? As the body changes. And as a young man, I had certain desires, and I'm an old man, I have certain desires. It's just always going to be there. And yet 2 days ago, I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita, and it says that as long as one has a material body, one will have material desires. You cannot get away from the desires. They're going to be there. But for the Krishna conscious person, he utilizes those desires in the service of the Lord. Vishayavanivartante nivaraharashidehinam, that one may restrict themselves from certain activities, and even though the taste may remain in the heart, but giving those things up and engaging in a positive action. The analogy Srila Prabhupada gives is that if a child has some article or something in their hand that may cause damage, say a knife or something sharp in their hand, if you go to take it away, the child will move really quickly and could harm themselves. But if you just dangle something that the child will be attracted to in front of them, the child will automatically give up the dangerous thing. In the same way, devotional service is like that. Devotional service has the ability to give us a sense of happiness, a sense of wholeness that doesn't take 47 hours. It can happen instantaneously if we surrender our heart. There's a part in the Bhagavad Gita that, or in the purport, or Srila Prabhupada said, if one just declares to Krishna, from this day forward, I am yours, at that point one is liberated. At that point one is actually given liberation. One is given, freedom from the clutches of material energy. This is a victory. We have this opportunity to become victorious. This is what Hiranyakashipu did when he got his body. Remember, I was going to tell you about this right here, right? This is victory. You ever see the devotees when they go before the deities, they go like this? Whenever they say, Srila Prabhupada, ki, jai, up go the arms, right? It's the victorious body language. There's body language. I've explained this to several people. There's body language. You can tell where someone's at just by how their body is. You can tell if someone's telling the truth by their facial expressions. I was a Gurukul teacher. You had to learn these things. And so, It's described that, say for example, you're running a race, and you run the race, and you're the first one to cross the line. What do you do? Show me what you do. Everybody, show me what you do. When you cross the line, you're the first one to cross the line. What do? You sit there on the floor and do nothing? What do? You sit, you like, huh? Come on, show me what you do. Everybody. Okay. Now I'll tell you a little story, because all classes are supposed to have stories. People who cannot see, that are blind. I don't know if you can use that, if it's politically correct anymore. People who are blind and have never seen anybody go like this in their life because they're blind, if they compete in some activity, if they win, they go like this. This is a power pose. This is a power. This means that, just like if you see somebody sitting like this, you know this guy's got it in control, right? You walk into the, you know, where the desk is situated in the office, how you're sitting in, I can't put my feet up on the desk here, but if you really got the feet up, then you're really in charge, right? How we position ourselves, right? How we position ourselves. And so the glory of Krishna consciousness is that we go every day and in the mood of Lord Chaitanya, we spread this Krishna conscious movement, this victory movement. But it's part of, well, glory, the victory. Chaito Dharpanam Marjanam Bhava Maha. It's a victory, victory. We win. What do we win? We win from the cycle of birth and death and old age and disease. We pull ourselves out of that situation simply by the act of surrender. The word surrender, papajante, in the Gita, Srila Prabhupada translates it as surrender. Papajante means to move forward. So each and every, like papajante, padayatra, papajante, each and every day, we move forward towards Krishna. And any endeavor, and again, we go back to those four principles, no prajalpa, no assumption, always do your best, don't worry about those who don't care about you, say. We go to those things, we just move forward, and we always do our best that day. Always do our best. And as we do our best, nehabhi karmanastati prachavayo navijase, that a little endeavor, even the littlest, insignificant endeavor that one makes in this effort for Krishna consciousness can protect one. The other day I was reading, and it's getting a little like, I want to wait, time for question. I read the Gita a lot. I like the Gita. It's, for me, it's like medicine. And so in the Gita it was explaining that that Krishna consciousness, I think it's Apichet Chudro, in that verse, it's described that someone may be, engaged in devotional service or become part of a society that engages in devotional service, but it's just kind of lackadaisical. See the body language? Huh? You see it? You can feel it. Just by seeing me, now I feel like I'm a loser, right? Like a lazy person, like lackadaisical. You become lackadaisical. You become, you just don't put your whole effort in it. But even if a little bit, even like a little speck, a little morsel, a little atomic particle of you has like a little interest, Krishna sees it. Krishna notices it. And Krishna amplifies it. And the next day you can get maybe two molecules. And the next day three. Pretty soon you got a simple cell organism. A simple cell Krishna bhakti organism residing in your brain and moving forward in Krishna consciousness. And when we give this information, you'll be surprised how interested people are in this information. The simple knowledge that we have, the simple knowledge that we're not this body, is outstanding information for an ordinary person. I'll tell just a quick story, because all lectures are supposed to have stories. That's my third story, so I'm sure many of you know Giriraj Swami. Giriraj Swami Ki Jai. I mean, the love I have for that person is, anyway, we're very close friends. So I'm at his house. His family gave him a home. It's family property. He lives in California. So it's in an area that's kind of mountainous. Not mountain, but hills. And so I have a cell phone. And my cell phone wasn't working. Now imagine a sannyasi without a cell phone. I mean, that's like the greatest pain that any sannyasi could ever experience, right? Because my cell phone's going from one tower to the other, and it doesn't know which tower to go to, right? So it's flipping back and forth, the cell phone's... So I get on a landline, a primitive form of communication, right? I get on the landline and I call my cell phone company, AT&T, probably not known here, and I tell them what's going on. And so the lady, she says, okay, let me call your number. So she calls my number and she runs it through the computer, and through the computer they figure out how to make it just stay on one tower. It takes like an hour and 15 minutes for them to get this done. So I'm talking to this lady the whole time. And then at the end, she says, well, do you have any other questions? Never ask a Hare Krishna that question. I said, well, not about my phone, but I do have one existential question that happened to me about 4 o'clock this morning. She said, go ahead, ask it. I said, well, I woke up this morning about 4 o'clock, and I looked, turned on the light in the bathroom, and I looked in the mirror, and I saw this guy that was 60 years old. This is 5 years ago now. I'm 65 this year. So like five, I said, I see this guy in the mirror that's 60 years old. I'm looking at him, and I go, where did this guy come from? I said, I remember looking in the mirror and being 3 or 4 or 5 years old and thinking that was me. I remember being like 10 years old looking in the mirror and I thought that was me. I remember being 20 years old in the mirror looking in the mirror and thinking, whoa, wow, that's good. That's really me. I remember looking in the mirror at 40 years old and saying, what's going on? I said, I looked in the mirror today and I thought, uh-oh, it's over. I said, you know, I can't figure out which body I am. You know, I remember being in the 5-year-old body, the 10-year-old body, the 20-year-old body, the 40-year-old body, and I thought that was me, and this was me, and that was me. I said, obviously I can't be this body. I must be just the conscious observer inside this body. Which is what one of the things that Prahlad Maharaj says, we're the conscious observers in the body. I said, I must be just the conscious observer inside this body, because the body is changing at every moment. I'm staying the same person. I'm just existing in this body. But I think that I'm a person. I feel like I have like a personality. Some people may like it, some people may not like it. See the hands? Like it, don't like it. They may like it, they may not like it. I said, but I have a personality. And if I'm coming from something, that which I come from must also have personality. So I said, I'm trying to figure out what my relationship is to that person, that creative personality which I come from, which must be a supreme entity. So could you please help me understand that and get to that point of understanding this level of existence? And she goes, oh my God, that's, you know, it's like the OMG, you know, oh my God. She said, that's the most interesting thing I've ever heard. She said, I've been changing my body all my life too. I can't answer your question, but I said, she said, I'd really like to know why. I said, well, you got my email on there, because, you know, you have to put your email address in. And I said, you can just send me a note. I said, I've been studying this for about 50 years. We can have a nice conversation. And it went from there. So even the simple, basic, you know, first verses of the second chapter where Krishna is starting to instruct Arjuna will blow away the mind, or, you know, well, yeah, what would you say? And that's American. They'll blow away the mind. It'll just send, huh? Astounded. Yeah, the astounded. Thank you, Krishna. I mean, it'll just astound an ordinary person. You know, you're not this body. It's just like, and there's always an opportunity to share Krishna consciousness. Just like sometimes I'm allowed, most sannyasis aren't allowed to do anything, but sometimes I'm allowed to go to the store and buy some groceries. And so when you go through the checkout counter, the person robotically says, and how are you today, sir? And most people say, fine. I go, well, I'm kind of stuck in this cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease, and I'm trying to find my way out. And they go, huh? And I say, well, yeah, you know, I'm in this thing where I took birth, and I'm always getting sick, and you know, look at me, I got gray hair since I was 30 years old, something's going wrong. And I said, you know, at any moment I can die, I said, so something, and they just, oh man. And then I just say, well, you know, here's a perfection of yoga. And I give them my business card, the Swami business card, Bhakti Yoga Meditation, right? And on the back it has a little caption from the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. Our very, Prabhupada, oh, genius. In the introduction to the Gita, Prabhupada says, just what is Bhagavad Gita? So you think, Bhagavad Gita, oh, it's a book, right? So he says, the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. So if you just say, what is this? I can say it's a bottle of water. Well, what's the purpose? It's to hold the water so that if someone gets thirsty, they can take a drink. So the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nations of material existence. And then he says, everyone, he says, we're all in the atmosphere, he says, of nescience, non-existence. We're not meant to be in this environment. We're eternal spirit souls. We're not meant to be here. And so when they get that little caption and it says Bhagavad Gita as it is, that's the bell, right? Bhagavad Gita as it is, opportunity to purchase. Take advantage. Okay. May I ask for a question? Okay, question? I'll stop there at the bell. Any questions? Or we have one, Krishnamurti, my close friend.
Why does he say, like us, not the Mahajans? Because everyone around them
are
the
leaders. It says, like us, meaning if I say, like us, probably say we. You know, we, us. In other words, it's like my understanding of us, we means that as a devotee, we understand we're together with the super soul within. So we say we, because we're together with Krishna in the Paramatma form. And so us, like we. Huh? It's a simple thing. It's kind of like sometimes somebody will ask, why do we say spirit soul? Why don't we just say soul? So spirit soul, it's an emphasis that, okay, this is really like a real thing. It's not just an abstract thing. It's like spirit soul. It's like double emphasized. I saw another hand, yes.
What are you speaking on changing? But sometimes we don't recognize our body is changing. We find that we are having pains and pressures, everything we find. But we always recognize that I am Prabhupada's. So from the beginning, I know my identity. But my body is changing, then I cannot recognize how the body is changing. Can you say something?
How can you recognize? Well, my sister has a family photo album, and I can just look at the family photo album and I can see my 2-year-old, I can see my baby body, I can see my 1-year-old body. So I can see all the different bodies just by looking at the pictures. And even when I come here to Vrindavan, I haven't been here for 2 years, and some people, I say, oh man, they changed. We can see the change. Obviously, you can see the change in your body. It's an interesting topic because time has this influence where it goes at a certain pace and you don't really notice it when it's happening, but over when there's big chunks of time passed, then you really notice a difference. So we can notice just by taking a look. I hope I understood your question. Did I understand his question? Anyone else? Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.